In your words, sup, ho?
What's up, ho?
Hey, what's up, ho? Yeah. Yeah, just like how you said that. Top of the morning to you, bro. It's about 11 a.m. here in sunny Portland, Oregon. It's not bad.
Too shabby.
You know what? I was really at a loss for what my song of the day was about to be, my intro song. Took one look at a certain playlist. Got it.
What playlist?
We're back. My Boldy James 2019 to 2020 playlist.
Oh, so your... Never mind. Best year in rap in the last decade playlist?
What?
I'm not trying to figure out how to word this. I don't know how to say it.
Spit it out,
I'm
son.
Saying Boldy James had the best year in rap in the last decade.
Okay. Oh, wait. Whoa, that's a spicy take. I was calling him top 10 rapper right now. I thought that was spicy, but I think you just took it up like a second level from where I was going.
I don't know what I'm talking about. I don't know.
Specifically.
I don't have any frame of reference.
You're like, I'm just the radio
guy. I'm just saying
guy.
Things.
Yeah, I gotta say stuff. What's up, Calvin? How you doing, bro?
Being inflammatory.
What's up with y'all?
Man, we're okay. We're just we're warming up here. We just hopped on.
I might have to move out of my studio saying I got bad internet connection.
You? Hey,
what's up?
Y'all hear me?
What's up? Welcome.
What's happening, bro? How do I see everybody at once?
Are you on the phone? Or if you're on the phone, if you swipe to the right, it should just show like all.
Oh wait, I got everybody.
All four of us. So
what up?
What up?
What's happening, baby?
Yeah, we got the gang in here. Yeah, yeah. I hit both of y'all up, but yo, this is Trent, aka Pax, up here. He does the show with me every week.
Nice.
Yes.
So we are the New Music Monday podcast. We've been doing. You guys are episode 78, and basically, yeah, we just talk about new albums when they come out. But shit didn't come out this week. Like y'all were the hottest shit that came out this week.
Hey, you picked the right week.
Yeah, yeah. So I think, we're
been rough last week with Drake.
Yeah, yeah. It's always hard to follow that up. That was just like three songs though. Y'all saw that sold like almost a million fucking units.
Crazy.
Oh damn, that's crazy. It's because everybody did freestyles over the beat.
That's a great point. And something about like a 3-track. EP, you know, right? Everybody's gonna spin that at least a few times, or
easy to listen.
Even if you
to,
just leave that shit on, it's gonna spin a few times, and the stream's gonna go up. So,
well, yeah, well, Grammy weekend, so popping on Grammy weekend.
That's right. That's right. Do y'all care about the Grammys at all?
I don't really.
Have you ever watched a Grammy ceremony?
I did probably when I was younger. I remember when Eminem and.
And fucking Rocket Man, Elton John. Yeah.
Elton John. Yeah. I remember that Grammy performance.
I remember hearing about that Grammy. Like, I feel like I know about it just because I've seen coverage of it. But I don't think I've ever really sat down and watched the whole one. And then one time I did a presentation in college about how the Grammys is racist. And then that pretty much set it from there. I was like, man, I really shouldn't be watching this shit or caring about it at all.
It's pretty weird. I remember when they picked Macklemore over Kendrick, right? For like best.
I think that was the year I wrote that. I think that was like the following year I wrote that. And I was like, look, Exhibit A. This is it.
Yeah. Yeah. Macklemore's a magician now.
Yeah, he's a magician. But Macklemore,
he's a street magician.
The thing with the Grammys that specifically was like Macklemore had the bigger song that year. Yep. Like Kendrick had the album, Macklemore had the bigger song with Thrift Shop. And the Grammys is the popularity contest. Definitely, you know, racist for sure. But
definitely political, which definitely gets inherently racist down the line. So
exactly. But I was kind of shocked that people reacted. It was like, are y'all...
Y'all surprised? Yeah. Rising,
you know?
Yeah.
I didn't like how Macklemore tweeted him, or like, you know,
his apology or his I don't deserve this.
Man, yeah. This is hip hop, man. Just take that trophy and run with it. Like,
yeah. I agree. That's funny too. You obviously just brought up like that era of Northwest hip hop that included people like Sand People and what's the group from Blue Scholars? That's the other like Seattle group that I remember. Mm-hmm. It was really like rocking heavy around here. And then Macklemore was a part of that, like pretty much at its root. So it's funny to see how far that has gone. I almost don't even think about him in that light anymore.
Yeah. I mean, we were doing shows with him at the Hawthorne. We like first show I did with Macklemore was at Satyricon for like 50 people.
The Satyricon, bro. Yeah. People don't even know it. That doesn't exist anymore, right?
Nah, it doesn't. Yeah,
the Star Theater now.
Yeah. What is it now?
The Star Theater. My brother's band, he had like a screamo band, and they played the Satyricon's like second to last show ever.
Oh, damn, that's tight.
It was really weird.
Satyricon was fire. I did my first show at Satyricon.
I have been waiting for someone to bring up the Satyricon on this podcast. 78 episodes, and it hasn't happened. I'm so excited that somebody brought that up because that's such a relic.
Me and Calvi are old. We got a lot of history in Portland. We're old men.
Y'all like Boldy James?
Yeah. I'd be heavy on Boldy, yep.
We were just talking about him in the light of, like, I think he's low-key a top 10 rapper right now. I probably got him and two other Griselda dudes in my top 10, and I think he just squeaks in there.
Yeah, he's fire.
London Drugs, Jay Worthy?
Yeah, he's fire. Yeah, it's just fire too, yeah.
What about Larry June? Y'all like Larry June?
All the homies bob him. I don't really listen to him like that, honestly.
All right. I've been listening to a lot of Larry June lately. Numbers.
Boldy James, but his first album was the best of My First Chemistry Set that came out
with Alchemist.
Yeah, the first Alchemist one. That was like 5 years ago or four.
I feel like 2014, 2015, somewhere around
there.
Yeah,
man, it's been a minute.
Yep.
Even the Boldface EP, which, you know, was like right before the album run and stuff.
He's dope. That's him and Chuck English are cousins.
Let's say that again.
I said Boldy and Chuck English are cousins.
I didn't know that. I mean, I knew that obviously they're both from Detroit, and I've been hearing them work together for a long time. Like, since the first time I heard of Boldy James was Cool Kids, like the fucking Jungle When Fish Ride Bicycles album. Yeah. Like, so that was forever ago.
Yeah.
Damn, I sound old too. Hold on one sec. What's up, everybody? Welcome to the New Music Monday podcast. We in here bullshitting. Ain't shit dropped this week. Y'all know it. I know it. Everybody knows it. So if you were coming here trying to see if we had some extra juice for you, we don't got it. But we got an amazing interview here, as well as a quick couple segments we're going to get through. And then after that, Pax has got to slide and go meet up with Mom Duke. So we can't keep him waiting too long, is what I'm saying. But y'all know who it is. I am Dev Delmolino, Devon Marcel Whitaker. I didn't introduce myself to y'all. I'm sorry. I'm Devon. And again, this is Pax or Trent. We grew up together, been homies for a minute. We both went to high school together. I'm like a Southeast kid. Trent grew up in the North Side, but we both went to Cleveland High School.
Word.
But we are welcoming to the show, again, Season 5, Episode 27, and this is Episode 78. We're just, like, pacing closer and closer to that 100. I'm very excited about that. But very excited to introduce these two gentlemen who are dropping a tape as of a couple days ago. Tiger Milk, we got Milk Mane, Blanco, and we got Calvin Valentine, which I don't know if I have the same amount of nicknames for you.
But I do have a lot of nicknames.
what do people call you, or what do people call yourself besides Calvin Valentine?
You have Calvi, you have Calvi P, you have Bong Mayer.
I saw that one. Okay, I like Calvi and I like Bong Mayer. I think we're gonna rock with those for the duration of this, and then we got Milk in the building. So what's up, Milk?
What's happening,
bro? Now, I have not been on to you very, very long. I won't lie. But I think what really caught my eye as of recent is you've been doing more freestyles lately.
Yeah.
More freestyles and posting them. Usually I don't see you as much on Instagram as I see you on Twitter. You look like you're more of a Twitter dude.
Yeah. It's the ADHD in me.
Yeah.
The timeline is like my brain.
Yeah, it's chaos. I like them both. I like them both. And I notice like Instagram people don't really fuck with Twitter and Twitter people don't really fuck with Instagram, but I like them both.
I have to use both now. You got to use both. But like for a long time, all I did was use Twitter. So that's why I'm more like on that one.
Yeah, I can understand that. So I guess real quick, I'm gonna run one of your freestyles just so people know who we have here. It's the most recent one. It's the most recent one. Everybody was gassing this the fuck up.
Go ahead.
I got it, shirt got it, stool got it, real got it. Hey, buddy saying they real solid. I don't believe none of them. That's how I feel about it. Came in the game and we try and check the mail out of here with the same ones I hopped off the porch with. Old heads love me, cause I keep the torch lit. Follow the trail of beats, I left corpses. Footprints of forces, they wanna join forces. The fortress, round table with the scummiest. Been eating all year and still the hungriest. We the city behind, I'm headed where the money is. I was on my 25th, knowing out here funded this. X, yeah, the Northeast on his hand, I feel it. This music thing probably won't work, I'm a realist. Marcus used to think I was gonna get a full ride. Instead I drank Henny, held my nuts and yelled wolf size.
So that's who we bringing in the building today.
what's to be embarrassed about?
That's what I'm saying, because that freestyle was the shit.
I don't know. This is weird. I don't be doing interviews or nothing like that. I don't know. This is weird.
Well, yeah, that's the thing I like about this podcast is in a lot of cases I get to talk to people and do one of their first interviews or it's not really something they do super duper often. And so even when I get people in here that I'm excited about or making really cool music and they got some tick, right? Like they're actually doing some shit. It's like even then, you know, a lot of the people that come on in this show, it's not like they get asked about a ton of interviews. And so that's the cool thing about what we're doing. So
yeah, that's dope. Yeah.
Again, I appreciate you being here. And I just wanted to throw that in there because as we talk about the tape, the album Tiger Milk, I mean, y'all see how he spits, but it's like that, man. Streams of thought. It's flowing really, really. I mean, it's like last week we had, do y'all know Sir Nye?
Yeah, that's my bro. We went to the same elementary school together.
Okay, yeah, we had him on last week, and he was talking about Slick Devious, who's also.
I have a tape with him.
You have a whole tape with him?
I have an old ass tape with him, yeah. We're at like probably 2012 or 2013 or something.
Damn. Is it still out there? Can it be found? Is it? Y'all might have to.
It's in the death throes of some band camp site or somewhere. It's not on streaming or nothing.
I'll do my research.
It's called Lightly Salted.
Lightly Salted. Man, he's been making music forever then. So have you then.
Yeah.
yes, we're talking about Tiger Milk today. I guess if we want, we could get down to real quick, I want to shout out also, we had like a big PDX music weekend in general. So it wasn't just y'all that dropped, but Sir Nye dropped a single last week. Old Grape God dropped his album last week or the week before. Fourth Wall Broke Me, which we got a chance to talk about. And that's why Sir Nye brought up Slick Devious. He was like, man, I saw him at a recording session one time and he freestyled for 45 minutes straight. Like, he didn't stop. Yep. Like, he just kept going, and beats just kept going. Like, have you seen him do something like that before?
Yeah, probably, yeah. I mean, that's what we're doing, get fucked up and freestyle.
So he's just liable to do it. So are you, probably.
I used to freestyle all the time and, like, battle and shit, but I don't really – I'm probably pretty rusty at this point at, like, coming off the dome for, like, a long time.
You working on your pen game, man.
Yeah,
it's different skills. Yeah. It's different parts of the brain.
Exactly.
But yeah, so I guess I just wanted to note that it was a pretty dope weekend of Portland music as well. So we got the project from y'all. We got the, like I said, Old Grape God last week, Sir Nye single this week. Mike Capes, did the remix off of one of his songs from the last project. And that's got Matt Randall on it. That's got Vinny DeWayne, Illmac. And then another dude we've had on the show semi-recently, Justice Botta. Okay, he dropped his free therapy single as well. I'll play that in a sec. It's pretty dope. Yeah, I feel like he just did some shit with Jordan Fletcher too. You know him? yeah, so they're both nice. And then Ken the Maestro. Ken the Maestro has like a Bandcamp project out at the moment too. And that's got Smythe Spinach on it. Been on the show. Broke Moses, Spenno, been on the show. Yuck God HD was on just a few episodes ago. Something something Brax, Breakfast Boy Brax, he needs to come back actually here pretty soon. Q Nasty is on that. So we have all of those on the playlist except for the Bandcamp album, obviously. But if y'all want to hear what PDX Music is dropping at the moment, guys, y'all can check that out at the New Music Monday by Dev Demolino Spotify Apple playlist. Those update weekly, drop with new music. Even though they're, again, nothing really dropped this week, so that was kind of sad. Oh, and Dark Fjord album, that's got Old Grape God on it, Efeezy. Yeah, so it just didn't stop this week. I wanted to note those just going into who we have here with us today and talking about Tiger Milk. So the first thing we do, guys, is customary with every album review that we do on this podcast. We talk about the album cover and we talk about the album title. And so I got to give y'all an A on the album cover. I got to give y'all a quick A on the album cover because I don't know what it is about this, but it just sets into how the album it sets me up for the album.
Go ahead, Calvin. Tell them about Laws and all that.
Yeah, I mean, that's Laws spoken right there. That's a special touch. You know, that's Green Team official. And Laws been friends since 2008, 2009, making music together. And we always come up with concepts and ideas for albums prior to making them, you know. And so that's how Tiger Milk came about. He did a project with Milk called Cocaine Cobra.
Yep. Cocaine Cobra, baby. Yep.
So he did the artwork for those then, too?
He did the artwork for that one. And, like, me and him did a project called High Noon at Cobra Island that came out last year, and he did the artwork for that.
Oh, yeah, I'm looking at that right now.
So on and so forth. And so, yeah, Laz is just my right-hand man, and we always come up with ideas. He was like, yo. So basically, me and him had a group with Only One called Tiger Hawk Cobra, THC. Mm. So I was Tiger, Only One was Hawk, Laws of Cobra.
I see.
We never did anything, but that was the group, and we kind of stuck with it.
Okay.
And, that's how Tiger Milk came about. Basically, Laws was like, yo, you and Milk should do this project. You should call it Tiger Milk. I'll do the artwork.
And that, as far as sounds, Milk, what did you kind of approach Cal V with in terms of, like, you know, how were you trying to get your point across and how you wanted this to sound? What were those early talks like, is what I'm asking.
I think he just sent over a it's hard to remember.
is it more like he sent you beats, or, you know, or
yeah,
did you kind of
he sent over a pack, and I think I just used everything almost on the pack besides like two or three beats. That's usually what I do. I usually try to make, like, I can't sit on music. I like putting shit out as fast as I can make it almost. Sure. This one I had to wait a little longer than I normally would have just because there's more pieces involved with this one. But Calvi, I've been on Calvi since I was like young. So like I always knew he was fire. And I kind of already knew like we both seemed to kind of know what we were trying to do with it, like how it was trying to be, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So like it was like unspoken in a way,
right? But you didn't, like, have to kind of have to express like, oh, I want the beat to sound like this, or I'm going for this type of feel. It was like y'all were both there.
Yeah
okay.
Yeah, and Laws like FaceTime all the time and smoke and just chop it up, and so I just played a bunch of beats for him when I was like picking out the beats for the project. And I kind of had an idea. I listened to, you know, the other stuff Milk put out last year and kind of had an idea of heard what Stewie did, heard what Laws did, you know, yeah. had to figure out like, okay, what can I bring to the table that's going to make this a little different and stand out from these projects or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
That was definitely approached as far as that goes, but.
And was that kind of an unspoken thing too? Or did you kind of come up with something that you thought this is definitely different and more specific to him?
Like, I can't send this man some throwaway beats.
Okay. Like, you gotta give him the top shelf. Because you know he'll rip them open.
Like, I'm going to have to, you know, if I want this shit to stand out, I'm going to have to bring some heat. So it was cool, though, because, like, some of the beats are from 2012. Some of the beats are from 2020.
Okay.
It's kind of like, you know, it's all over the board. But, yeah, man, it's a long time coming. Like, I was in a group called T&E, and we used to do shows with Milk's Crew, Low B, mm-hmm. all the time. And so, you know, I was like 10-plus years ago. So,
yeah.
Long overdue.
Long time ago. Yeah.
Damn, y'all have definitely paid your dues, like, for real. So I apologize that I'm really just finding out about both of y'all then. Because it seems like there's so much on the other side.
That's a good thing. Don't apologize for that. That's a good thing. It means we're doing something right.
Yeah. I would absolutely agree. And again, like I said, you know, like the response that I'm seeing to your project Tiger Milk definitely feels a little different than when I see people I know or people that I interview on this podcast drop something.
Nice.
I mean, yeah, that's all there is to it. Like, I just noticed, like, some people are really, really excited about it. And I think, to be honest, it's like the length of the project is perfect. I think it's something that is really easy for people to try out. And then when they do, I think the beats and the rhymes are so there from the go that I think, like, it's really, really easy just to listen to this really quick 20-minute project. But it's got 8 songs, and it's got 8 different songs in it. I think that's what people seem to be excited about. Like, it's a really good album. It's a real good project.
Thank you.
Appreciate that. I mean, that's, you know, that's what I pride myself on doing as a producer. I'm not just like a beat maker. It's like, I like putting albums together, you know? So I think this was another opportunity for me to do that with Milk just sent me raps, and I was able to, like, you know, create it into like what I like to do. And not a lot of rappers allow me to do that because they have a strong vision of what they want or just don't trust the process enough. So I think that speaks to kind of like what we're able to do. It was just like two artists trusting that they're both going to kill it.
Yeah. The best music tends to come out like that. I've heard other producers kind of say that some artists they work with, and it's real symbiotic. It's real like we're kind of both thinking in the same direction. And then, you know, some artists do have a very particular vision themselves, and I'm sure the producer can be that way themselves too.
Yeah.
And so is that something you experience often?
Yeah. As far as like producing, for sure. Mm-hmm. You know, especially if you're just doing like a one-off track for an artist or whatever, it's like, you're not going to have as much say in it. And for me, I get a lot of people like coming and wanting to work with me off of projects that I fully produced. And they don't really like understand the process of that. You know, they think like, oh, I'm just going to get a beat and it's going to have the same like feeling as this whole album or whatever, you know? And it's about that. It's about allowing the producer to be able to kind of like put their ear to it if they're able to do that, you know?
I understand, man. I want to kind of diverge for a moment and ask you about the Planet Asia album from last year. Mm-hmm. Because I remember kind of covering, I used to do like a Instagram story too, along with the podcast. I would just like put all the releases up on my story for a day. And I remember going over this and I don't know, how did this project come about? How did you link up with Planet Asia and was it him that approached you, or, you know, how did this tape happen?
I'm going to bring y'all back.
Yeah, take me back, bro.
Project came out already. This was the re-release, the 2020
That's
re-release.
That's right, yeah.
I was living in Eugene, Oregon. I was like 19 years old. It was like 2008, 2009. And I reached out to a bunch of rappers on MySpace. And I was like, yo, I got beats. I hit up like Murs, Abstract Rude, like a bunch of LA underground you know, artist that I just grew up loving, and Planet Asia hit me back. He's like, yo, your beats are tight, like let's do something. And ended up doing like a whole project with him basically. And originally it was gonna come out on Warner Bros. Through Talib Kweli's label, Blacksmith. So I'm like 19, 20 years old. Like I got an album with Planet Asia. It's about to come out on a major label. It's about to go crazy. Then Blacksmith got dropped from Warner Bros. So our album got like, you know, luckily we didn't sign anything. So I still owned all the rights to it. But then it kind of sat in limbo for a bit. And then I moved up to Portland and ended up releasing it around like 2010 or 11 with Kenny Fresh and through his blog and Fresh Select shit. And so, yeah, we did a vinyl for it and everything. That's how I first met Tron and all these dudes, was making the Planet Asia vinyl with their homie. But yeah, so that's how it came about. And then I was just sitting around like, damn, this shit hasn't been on streaming services. We only put it on Bandcamp or whatever.
Yeah.
Let me like put the instrumentals up and do a little re-release for 2020. And so.
And y'all actually own it. So in the long run, I guess that works out for you.
Yeah, definitely. So. I mean, I would have loved for it to come out on Blacksmith. That would have been crazy. Mm. But yeah, so Planet Asia's a homie, man. I did shows with him in Eugene and in Portland and down here in LA and shit, and that's my dog, you know. It's like he's the first like big artist that I worked with when I was young that kind of showed me like, oh, showed a kid from Eugene like, damn, you got the juice, run with it, you know?
Yeah, and he had already, so I remember now, because I remember covering that album at the time and then making the same mistake. I thought it was a new project, right? And then I did a little more research and I realized like, oh, this is like from way back. And so even at that point, he had been in it for a minute, basically. Like, he had really been pretty deep. I mean, he probably, I don't know how long he had been rapping before that, but it's probably at least like 10, 11 years. And you're saying that project was originally done maybe 10 years ago?
Yeah, we did it in 2008.
Yeah. So that's crazy. That's crazy. That's crazy. He still drops really, really often, too.
Yeah, and he's still like one of the best MCs ever. You know, talk about freestyling, like that's the best.
Oh, I haven't heard him freestyle.
He's the best I've ever heard. I would pick him up and to like drive to the studio when I first moved out here, and I was just like bumping beats when we're like driving.
Yeah.
He'd just be barring up, and I'm like, damn, dude, you're gonna lay that down when we get to the studio? He's like, I'm freestyling right now. And these are like written, these are like bars.
Yeah. he actually dropped some shit today, or not today, but this weekend. Block Shaman. I haven't gotten to it yet, but I'll definitely make sure to check that out. One of the few albums I was actually looking at this weekend.
Yep. Shout out to Asia, man. That's the homie. We talk every now and again, and yeah, man, we've always talked about doing a follow up, but it's never happened. But that album still holds up, you know, like 10 years plus later. Like, it's funny how like full circle hip hop comes around, because we were doing the like no drum Soul Sample Loop shit back in 2008.
Yeah, it was
now
pretty.
Now that shit's hella popular again, and this album like sits right in that world like it's brand new.
Yeah, yeah, that's cool, man. I love that story, by the way. I appreciate you telling that. Now, just like from looking at your Instagram, you have a list of people that you produced for in the past, and I'll just list them off because there's some cool names in here, and De La Soul's on here, Nas is on here, Boogie and IDK is on here. Illa J, Travis Thompson, Seattle, Bun B, Juicy J, all people we talk about on this podcast at one time or another. How did De La Soul come together?
That was reaching out through social media again. And Plug One was on Twitter and saying, like, we're working on some new De La shit. I was like, yo, I got beats. He DM'd me and he was like, well, send them through. And so I sent him, I don't know, like 25 beats, like a folder, like 25 joints. And he was like, these are fire. Here's our official email. Mm-hmm. Keep sending me stuff. And I sent him probably like 50 more joints and they picked one. And, it was one of those times I was doing a project with Illmac at the time called The Red Tape, where we were like sampling all Otis Redding. It was a follow up to our project called The Green Tape, where we sampled all Al Green.
Al Green, yeah.
And so Illmac actually had a song to this beat, but I'm like, man, De La would sound good on this. I'm just going to throw it in the folder. They probably won't pick it. And of course, that was the one they picked. And so, yeah. Then it was kind of like This was like 2013, and I was living in Portland at the time still. And yeah, then they just kind of emailed me a little rough draft of it. Then like 3 or 4 months went by and I didn't hear nothing. So I was like, whatever, you know, maybe nothing came of it. And then I was like sitting down for dinner one night and I'm like, look at my email and it's like, we got Nas on the song. And that was that. It was crazy.
That's pretty fucking exciting, bro.
Yeah. So then that one, they put that one out to promote their Kickstarter. You know, they were kind of one of the first like bigger groups to do a Kickstarter. Mm-hmm. And so they like used that song as the catalyst to like, you know, it was like on Rolling Stone, New York Times, like all these places, because they're like, here's our song with Nas, give us some money.
Mm-hmm.
And that was really dope, man. It was a special, special moment for sure. Like DJ Premier was playing the shit on the radio all the time and like all this other shit that was just like mind blowing as a, you know, growing up loving De La Soul and Nas and being able to do that joint was nuts.
That's amazing, man. I think it's really cool that you're from this area. I'm really excited that you still obviously fuck with this area and people from here. Cause y'all made some heat. And I don't know, it's nice to have somebody like you who has just been at it, you know, who's been working, who's had some moments worth really being really excited about. And just kind of, you know, show people kind of where your lineage has been, you know, for the past 10 years or so or more. So that's cool. It sounds like you're a hustler too. I mean, most of your stories start with, yeah, I was just reaching out. I was looking for something. I was, you know, sending beats here and there and I'm letting people know what I do. And, yeah, all the way back to the MySpace days on some Soulja Boy shit.
Yeah, all back to in person, you know, going to shows. I mean, I can't, you know, like in Eugene, the Wow Hall or whatever, you could see any performer and then they'd just be like standing to the side of the stage because it's fucking
it's tiny.
Yeah, it's like, so I've been able to interact with a bunch of my favorite artists that way and make connections with them through, like, you would think living in a small town is a disadvantage, but low-key can be an advantage because you live out in LA. And an artist comes to LA, they're hitting up Alchemist, they're hitting up this dude, they're hitting up that dude. You're kind of getting lots of the sauce. But when you live in like when I lived in Portland, like
even
when
in Sean Portland,
came to town, they hit me up. You know, like when this artist came to town, they hit me up. Whatever. That's how I met Illa J. That's how I met Frank Nitt. All those dudes was like, so there's something special for the living in a smaller market and doing your thing for sure.
That's cool. I rarely hear people say something like that. A lot of people are like, man, it's just too small here, or there's just nothing going on here, or whatnot.
Yeah, but that means they're not getting it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like if the city's not too small, make go hustle, man. If you think like, oh, I'm getting slept on because my city's small, come out to L.A. Like,
you'll get really slept on. Yeah, people will never wake up. No,
exactly. So yeah, I mean, I never looked at like the city or the place I lived as the reason why my career is not doing good or doing good. You know, it's really about you and what you're willing to put in.
Yeah.
Absolutely
understand that. Yeah, I never, so I grew up here in Portland, but my brother did go to U of O, and I remember when he was there, he lived in the apartment building right next to the Wow Hall. So I've never actually been to a show there, but I remember being like 11, 12, 13 or so and always seeing it. I know how fucking small and just like a hallway it is, but I know it's always had like some cool shows a lot of times when people are still really small. Like I remember, I feel like Lady Gaga performed there even one time, and there's all kinds of shit like that.
Yeah, no, definitely, man. The Wow Hall, I've been performing at the Wow Hall since I was like 6 years old. Like that's my home.
Now, pre-COVID and whatnot, is that an institution that is still like up and running and doing fine?
The Wow Hall?
Yeah.
I just saw they did some like live benefit show. Like some live stream benefit show. So I think, you know, I would be surprised if like the community of Eugene let that place, you know, fall apart. I think it's got so much history. So many people have done so many things because it's like a community center too, you know? Mm-hmm. So it'd be like, you'd have like a People Under the Stairs show one night, and then the next night's like a community local dance performance or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a little different than like McDonald Theater, some of the bigger spots in Eugene.
Speaking of people under the stairs, we kind of never did our tribute to people under the stairs, you know, with recent news. So I guess just shout out to Double K, but rest in peace, Double K. We never did that. I thought we were going to come in here and do like a little people under the stairs tribute, play a few tracks, and we never did that. So
yeah, y'all got to me.
Yeah, maybe I'll bring it back next episode. So yeah. Real quick, man, let's wrap up the Tiger Milk talk. Do y'all have any favorite tracks off of here, or is it like you can't pick a favorite out of them?
I like the one with Ep, Dear Rose. It's my favorite.
Why?
I always thought it was super corny to do like the common thing, you know, the like it's a girl, you're talking about a girl, but it's like you're talking about a girl.
Yeah.
But then so I was like, damn, I'm gonna do that, even though I think it's hella corny. And I was like, oh shit, I see why people do this.
It's kind of beautiful and fun.
Yeah. So that part cracked. In fact, before I wrote that, I was just making fun of people doing that, like, the day before I wrote that shit to my homie. And I was like, nah, let me just do it. And like, I was able to like, most of the time on most records, I just be talking shit. You know what I mean? Like, you know, that's how I rap really, is I'm just talking shit. But like on that one, I'm actually like talking about like my city and like what I think about it now and all that. So yeah. And Ep, I just thought Ep coming like right after me, how he sounds and how he like flowed and like was able to like keep the concept like right after me. I thought, it's my favorite beat that Calvi sent me, I think. When you just hear the instrumental.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's important that you did a track like this, because you're right. In a lot of other songs, it's like you rap how you rap. You talk shit, you spew shit. It's just kind of like, it's just coming out. And it's nice that you could show, just for a moment, like, yeah, if I wanted to do something kind of more focused and with like an idea, that I could do that. But this is more, everything else you hear on this is more what I do. I feel like I understood that even just from, like I said, I just started listening to you. I obviously hadn't talked to you yet, so
yeah,
that definitely struck me as well.
That was my favorite song on the Cocaine Cobra joint. It was the one where you're like getting a little deeper about shit. I forget what the title is.
Remember that because you, so one of the parts I remember about it, you talked about like your eyesight, right? Is that the track that you're talking about?
There's one 55. Yeah, that one I talk about. I can't try.
Yeah, but that one's like, that one, when I listened to the project, I was like, oh, this is my joint. I don't know. I always like, it was like Currency when he released that Golden Chrome song last year. It was kind of like the first time, like, I'm a huge Currency fan. And I was like, the first time he kind of like broke that layer of like, I'm going to like pimp player this shit, which I love hearing. But it was like, you got to hear him like talk about his son and get a little like deeper about emotions, and like that track did really well for him, I think.
Yeah,
there's room for that if you can not do it corny like Milk was saying, you know. It's hard to do shit like that corny.
It could sound corny too when everything else that you do is way more about like having fun with it it's cool that you could pivot like that, you know. I think it's one small moment in the track list there, but it's something that gives it another, you know, another element, another texture, another another level of things. So
my other favorite joint is the last song, because it's the last song I did on it, and I just like the Calvi's on the hook. And it's funny because I didn't even like fuck with that beat like that really.
Be like one of my two favorite beats on the project.
really I just, for some reason, I wasn't like, this is weak, it wasn't like ringing to me like that. But then I was like, I need to write one more joint, because it was ending on the posse cut, and I was like, nah, we need just like a regular joint to finish the tape off. So, and it ended up being my favorite one. One of my favorite ones.
I would say this was one of my early favorites. White Denim too. Really, the first two tracks, you really like just come right out the gate spitting. And so I like that. There's really no miss on here though. Like, that's probably the other really solid thing about it. Each one of these
got an 8-track project, you better not have a miss on it.
Yeah, you exactly. Can't be exactly.
Right? That weighs too much. One song weighs too much on an 8-song project. I agree.
Man, actually, I like Rod Laver. I don't know. I just like the project, I guess.
Me too, like yeah. Because every song, while it's a little bit different, it's still like, I mean, it's got the same element. You come on.
I carry the same
thing. You carry the same feel. Yeah, and everything's different, but at the same time, it's like one track, go to the next, to the next. Did y'all spend much time ordering these tracks, or did they feel like they just kind of went together? Do you feel like that you could mix the track list up and it wouldn't really matter, affect the album? What do you think?
Calvi did all that. Calvi sequenced it and made the order, put all the, like, also another thing I can say about this was like my Doom project, because when I started writing this, Doom had just passed, and I was like heavy on my Doom shit, like just listening to Doom every day. So like even in my like writing a little bit, I like was thinking about Doom in a way, and like the way Calvi put all like the ill like vocals, like the sample audio clips, like, you know, and it kind of sounds like handmade, like a Doom album to me, a little bit like that. So to me, this is like my Doom album.
You kind of reminded me, because I was going to ask about who was putting in the, like you said, the vocal interludes or the little pieces that transition songs or or stuff like that. So that was also Calvi then.
Yeah.
And then with the sequence of the album, I know he said that you did that. So was that a detailed process for you, or do you feel like if you switch these songs up that it doesn't really take anything away from the project?
No, it's definitely like extremely important, you know. I think as far as like having how the tracks are laid out for the listeners, you know, because it's how you consume it, and if you put too many songs in a row that have a similar vibe, it's not, you know, it's like I think you could kind of switch these songs around and it might not feel as great, you know.
So
that's definitely a process, and that goes back to what I was saying about like producing. Like, that's what I love to do. I love like making these tracks and then putting them in the right order, being like, okay, this one needs a little skit to go in between this, and I should like do some ad lib on this one because Milk didn't send me enough vocals, or I need to do a hook on
this needs to.
And that was the kind of thing about it too, that like when I listened to his other ones, it was just rap, you know, all the way through. There wasn't that many hooks or like little breathing moments, and that's what I'm all about, like in music, is like giving the listener a break for a second. And like for me personally, I just can't be rapped at constantly, you know. I need a breath of fresh air. I need another voice to come in. So it was like where we placed the Brill joint was very important, you know, because like Milk's not rapping on that one. So it's like that one, you can't put that song first, or you can't put it last. You know, like, it needs to be in its right spot. And like you were saying about the posse cut, can't end with the posse cut. Like Tron can't be the last
person to finish rapping on your album. Some people do that though.
Yeah, some people, but I think like that's, you know, really important to me as far as like making sure it's something. I still listen to albums, so I'm not the type like, oh, the single's hot, the rest of the shit can just be thrown around. It's like, nah, I want to sit down for 20 minutes and vibe for this shit and then play it again.
Yeah. Facts.
It's kind of what this podcast is all about, consuming albums. So it's nice to hear that y'all, because I mean, I knew there was, you can tell there's a lot of detailed aspects to how this is produced, but it's nice to hear y'all explain exactly what details went into the project, because I can appreciate those. The other biggest compliment I was going to give y'all on this album is that y'all gave me what I think I ask for in every project that I listen to, especially like when I review a project on this album. Y'all gave me like a better second and third listen. Like, the second listen was better than the first listen. I realized I was sleeping on shit on the first listen, and then I went back on the third listen and had the same kind of thought process on it, thinking back about my second listen. And that's really all I could ask for. No matter how good it is, as long as it like gets better the more I listen to it, that is something that definitely stood out to me. So if anybody hears this the first time, I definitely am telling you, run it back. Like I said, 20 minutes, easy. Like, run that shit back.
You're going to miss bars.
Like, you're going to miss bars. That's the thing.
I mixed this shit. I listened to it a bunch, and I'm still like, I listened to it yesterday, and I was like, oh, that's what he's saying in that
part. Yeah.
So I think that, you know, that has to do with Milk's skills as a rapper. And, you know, he's not, there's no filler.
Like, and I appreciate it.
There's going to be some filler. I'm just talking some shit. I'll probably talk about Polo like 3 times within the.
And if you're from Portland too, like, you're going to get just that added extra layer of, there's going to be a couple lines that you catch because they refer to the neighborhood that you grew up in or something. You said something about me and her making out at the hotcake house or something like that. And I'm like, bruh, okay, see, I'm not even from where y'all from, and you shouted out my part of the city. I was really excited about that. So
yeah, or he said like take the PUA to the plug house or some shit, and like the whole time I'm like, I don't know what the fuck he's talking about. Like, no, the homie always tweeted something about the Portland assist, and I'm like, oh.
Yes, that I would say that's like one of my favorite things that music can do, is like if I can get a better. If it gets better as it goes on, or I understand more about it as I listen to it more, I definitely really appreciate that. We talk about that a lot on the podcast as well. Pax, oh, one sec, man. I want to hear Pax for a moment. I haven't heard enough Pax. I feel like we're like 45 minutes in. Haven't heard enough Pax. Pax, how you doing, bro?
I'm doing great. No, I've just been soaking in the what you guys are saying, because it's all... It's cool to have two artists that, you know, we've had a lot of artists on here, but like to have two artists, one with in Cal with the like experiences you've had as a producer, that not a lot of the artists we've had on here are quite as established as that. And I think it's really interesting. So I'm just going to get all my thoughts out at once, but it was very interesting and encouraging for people like me and Dev, who, you know, kind of built the podcast from the ground up and stuff, to hear somebody as established as you just being like, yeah, I just reached out to people on Instagram. That's what we do. That's how we got in touch with y'all. Like, you know, like, that's what we've been doing. And it's just like hard work and grinding and stuff. That's always, I mean, you hear it all the time, but to have somebody on here, like telling you that's how it's done, it's encouraging. Yeah. And then with Milk, just like, I don't know, man. The bars are just crazy. Like,
thank you, bro.
You guys were just talking about, we're just like, I'm sitting there in the car driving down McLaughlin on my way home from the bins, and just like, I'm literally like seeing shit you're talking about as I'm driving. I'm just like, oh, it's such a hit home. But yeah, man, the whole project is just so clean and concise. And that's like probably my favorite thing in a project, is just like, how concise and succinct can you be with what you're doing throughout the whole track list, and the whole thing is just like, is worth, it's such a good listen.
Thank you, bro. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Hearing Cal talk about some of his experiences in the past really reminded me of us hearing Trox talk about similar things, like, you know, really stuff that can only be a testament to.
Up next, baby.
Yes, sir. Yes, hell please. Yeah. Yo, definitely. Please, we love Trox, and the same kind of thing, you know, it's just been time in the game and just really putting yourself out there for years at a time, and really like really grinding, and that's what I see in someone like Trox, that's what I see in someone like Cal on the producing side of things. And so that's kind of what that reminded me of, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's too easy to get down on yourself, or to listen to other people's opinions and get discouraged, or see what other people are doing and be like, I should be doing this. And I've just always like done my career like, you know, what feels right to me. And like somebody in my position at this moment, not a lot of artists might even like reach out to like people from their past, or like, you know, want to do, you know, it's like shit like that. It's just, you have to be open, and you have to just do what you love at the end of the day. You know, it's like, I could easily have been like, you know, I don't want to do this Milk project because whatever. I'm doing this major label shit right now.
Right, a lot of people look up. A lot of people look up to the next.
It's like, fuck that shit. I'm just trying to make great music. You know what I mean?
And you can do both. I mean, like, for real, you can do both, right? Like, you can can do a tape with Milk, and you could do a tape with somebody that has been on your wish list or something like that in the near future. Not just somebody that you've known through the past, but somebody that's like, that could be a new level for you. You could do both, and the best artists usually do a little bit of both. They look back, they look forward, they don't forget where they came from. No,
exactly. And I have the same excitement that I do when I get like a fucking song with Burna Boy than that I do when I'm doing this shit with Milk. You know, like, it's exciting to see people talk about it. I think dude's extremely dope, and like, I'm hoping whatever my fan base is can help him out a bit.
Exactly.
And maybe one of the labels that follows me, or one of the A&Rs, sees his shit and goes like, damn, people are sleeping on this dude, let's fucking give him a little bag and see what he can do with it.
I follow a lot of people on Instagram, and I've noticed a lot of people, like, I like to follow a lot of industry people because it just teaches me about who's fucking, who's who. And so, yeah, just a lot of people, I noticed a lot of people that I follow you, whether it be from here or not, whether it be fucking, I don't know, Stimulator Jones or some shit. We just reviewed his album a few weeks ago.
Yeah, that'd be dope as fuck.
yeah, he is. I that was also something that I noticed that stood out to me when I reached out to you as well. And it's really exciting to have you both on here again. I know I said that, but reiterating that, it's really, really cool to be doing this with y'all. I appreciate y'all coming on. Any other details y'all want to share about Tiger Milk? I feel like we've given it the praise it deserves. I'm ready to let people listen to it, jam it, and tell me what they think about it. But anything else y'all want to make sure people know if they're just going into it, they never heard either one of y'all?
Just bump it, you know, slap that shit.
Yep, all that. And to the other artists, man, y'all need to step your game up as far as like work ethic.
True. True.
Right now, like this project, we, I don't know how long it took Milk to write the raps, but it was not very long. I feel like 3 days. And literally I made the project in a night as far as like
sequence. Yeah, I sent you the audio, the vocals, and then it was done like that next day.
So not to say that we rush shit. We work quickly because of the time we've put into this stuff, but
yeah,
I just think artists need that in their life. It's like, bro, I just work with a lot of people who hold on to shit too much or overthink shit.
Yeah,
it's
you just can't about do like that these days. It feels like there's no real reason for it.
There's a reason for it if you don't got the skills, and you need to like keep working on your skills for sure. But at a certain point, you're like, I make good beats. This dude makes good raps. Yep. Just trust the process. You know?
Yeah.
What I
mean?
Yeah.
Don't overthink it.
Should be fun, easy. If you nice, it's easy.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that's what you can hear in this project, and why like it has the people want to re-listen to it, and people because they can tell like it was a labor of love, and we just had a good time. The rap's got some humor to it. The little skits got some humor to it. Like it's, you know, we don't take ourselves too serious in that form, which I think makes it fun to listen to. Where it's like you can just enjoy the shit with the little goofy ass skits and shit.
Yeah. It's got that balance. It's like sharp, so you know like these people have put in work. They've been, you know, they have something very clean. But then at the same time, yeah, not taking it too seriously and letting it be fun, because that's what's going to make me want to re-listen to it. People's music don't really sound like that much fun. Like, whether it's any kind of emotion it brings me, like there still should be a little bit of that to it. So, yeah, I like that y'all said that. Have y'all, do y'all listen to Silk Money? Y'all ever listen to Silk Money? Okay. He's got a great project out. It's called Attack of the 85. It came out in 2020. It's produced by a guy named Khalil Blue. And they were kind of inspired by Mad Gibbs in a way when they made that project. It's similarly like 30 minutes, 10 songs or so. Silk is crazy. I mean, talk about lyrics, like same thing, like really like it seems like he's been holding on to a lot of thoughts, right? But I interviewed the producer for that album, and he was saying like, yeah, it's kind of crazy, he like he'll write and write and write for a long time, and then when he goes in, like he'll record that shit in a day. Like that's how the project was made. So and there's something about when like actually getting into the studio and making something quick like that that I think just kind of, I don't know, lightning in a bottle sometimes.
Yeah. It's because it's like a vibe. It's like a feeling, you know, like it's not something that's like tangible. That's why I can't sit on music, because like I'm done with this now. You know right. what I mean? Like yeah. I can't, like this is my thing right now, what I'm doing. It's like what I'm living, what I'm seeing, what, you know what I mean? Like
for sure.
And the longer, and my shit's hella like referential to the time I make it. Like I'm talking about sports events that are happening right now. I'm talking about, you know what I mean? So it's like a time capsule. You know what I mean? Like that's how I look at it.
That's cool. And you make a bunch of old references too. So if these references become old, then your other just really specific references are already, they just like, they become old with those other old ones. Yeah. That's cool. That's cool. Again, can't say enough about the project. Tiger Milk, Calvin Valentine, Milk, Maine. Check it out. That's M-I-L-C, Milk, Maine. So we can go ahead and slide into the couple segments we wanted to do. We got this thing called Recently Played. We just come on and talk about a couple projects, like I said, that I think are either a little underrated. I don't hear people talk about that often, or I think people that listen to this podcast might not have heard. So I got one. Pax has got one. If that, again, rings any bells for you by the time we finish up and you want to share something that you've been checking out lately, feel free. I'll leave some time for y'all to do that. But I wanted to bring up one Miles Davis album. A posthumous Miles Davis album with Robert Glasper. Everything's Beautiful came out in 2016.
That album is crazy.
I know. We were just talking about Illa J. Illa J is on it. Erykah Badu is on this. Fonte has like a crazy song on this project. Probably my favorite moments on here are the... So we're listening to now the Bilal song, Ghetto Walkin', and then a few tracks later, the Fonte Violet song. Probably my two favorites out of this. But Stevie Wonder is on this shit. It's pretty amazing. And it's, you know, we talk about like albums, and then we talk about albums that are a little bit easier to have on, you know, maybe more a little like aux chord playlist type deal. And so this is just some of that nice kind of summery in some moments, kind of vibey music that I think is going to be really nice to have on and just in rotation as things get a little nicer out here and I'm outside a little bit more. And I do have a bonus one, though, a side project that I wanted to bring up. So, again, that was Miles Davis. What's that? Everything's Beautiful. Miles Davis, Everything's Beautiful. The bonus project I wanted to bring up is more recent. And I don't know if this was really... I think it was slept on. The Jesus Is Born album that came along with Kanye's Jesus Is King album. So remember like the Sunday Service Choir did a whole album. Okay, that shit goes crazy. Like in some of these moments. They do some... renditions of songs that either he's been on or has done, and then they do some other ones like SWV's Rain, shit like that is on here. I don't ever hear people talk about it. I'm not really, you know, into religion per se, but there is some beautiful gospel music out there, and it's cool to get gospel music that has a genuinely like modern, maybe even mainstream kind of appeal. Right, with someone like Kanye kind of in the air of this. So, yeah. Those are my two. Pax, floor is yours, buddy.
Okay, my original was going to be a jazz album as well, but I called an audible once you brought up the Miles Davis. But the jazz album I've been bumping nonstop lately is a Roy Hargrove album, The Vibe.
What was that, Roy Hargrove?
This is the album called The Vibe. It's he's a trumpeteer, but it's just the perfect vibe. It's The Vibe. But so I've just been listening to that while the weather's been nicer here in Portland and gearing up for spring. My audible call, because you brought up a jazz album, want to switch it up a little bit, was there's an artist I've been really into, like dream pop lately. I've been kind of like stepping outside of hip hop as of late, and been really into like dream pop and like.
I see you listening to Tops. I see you.
Yeah, I'm into the Tops.
I see you bumming with you. Yeah, I know you, bro.
But there's an album by. Has anyone here ever delved into like Twin Peaks or any of David Lynch's films or anything like that? So Julie Cruz is the artist that does a lot of like the vocal stuff in David Lynch's movies and film and TV and all that.
Yeah.
And she has a couple albums out on streaming, and one of them is called The Voice of Love. And it is like just the most like atmospheric, if you want to like just trip out for a little bit, like the shit is just like perfect. But yeah, I threw it on at work, and I work with like 7 other people, and everyone at the end of the album was just like, what the fuck was that? That shit was crazy. but it's good. It's great. She has a beautiful voice, and it's very like just like synth driven, and it's cool. But I've been really into that shit lately, so that's probably what I've been trying to put people on to those two albums as of late.
Cool. Yeah. That White Handgrove album, it's a classic. That dude did horns on D'Angelo Voodoo, like Water Common.
Mm-hmm.
He's incredible. He's one of those. It's crazy how many like that guys there are in jazz. Like so many, like, oh, who did the horns on this? Who did the piano on this? Who did bass on this? And mm-hmm. it's like somebody with just like an extensive, crazy catalog that's just like so under the radar, so yeah, underground. And Roy Hargrove is one of those guys.
Yeah, definitely that. You want a dream pop album? Have you heard of Ryan Beatty, Boy in Jeans?
No, I haven't.
I've heard of Ryan Beatty. Like,
yeah,
that's Calvi produced that.
Yeah. Check oh,
it. Wait, this whole project, right. this whole album.
Yeah, I did the whole album, Boy in Jeans.
Dang.
Yo,
okay.
Let's fucking go.
Yeah, I'll definitely check that out. I know of Ryan Beatty.
It's fire. I impressed a girl with that. I told him that the dude who's producing my album produced that album.
I mean, yo.
It worked.
She had me lit out here. Feel me?
Yeah. You have been
with the assist.
One,
man. God, I'm trying to do, man. That's
what he hit that man with the hockey assist.
Yeah, exactly.
My man's man is Ryan Beatty. That's dope. That's great. Super, super dope. Yo, Kyle, I'm gonna take that as your recently played, you know, underrated project, because I make like an Instagram post out of this too, so I'm gonna share all these. But I don't know if you got one, Milk.
I kind of got a couple in my head.
Yeah, throw them out.
It's stupid random though, but
go ahead.
That's great.
The newest Mountain Goats album.
Mountain Goats.
Nas.
Oh shit.
Mountain Goats.
I didn't know you listened to Mountain Goats.
No,
bro.
I didn't know that either.
Seen him perform at the Wild Hall a few times. Like, I love the Mountain.
Oh, really? Yeah, I fuss. That dude's just like the greatest.
You said Getting Into Knives. That's the one.
Yeah.
Okay.
I've been bumping that a lot. I don't hear people talk about it, but I'm sure there's people that obviously know about it. And then a rap for like more on some rap shit. This kid, this dude out of DC named Uncle John, but he spells it hella fucked
yeah,
up.
Yeah, Uncle John is fire. Uncle John is fire as hell.
We just reviewed
below,
it.
What's it called? So Below. As above,
so below. Yeah.
And what's the dude who did the beats? What's his name?
Let's see.
He's like a model. He's like a Supreme model, skateboarder dude.
Is it?
Yeah, I didn't know.
John
that.
Anthony Tucker? No, that's him. That's Uncle John. No, you're not talking about Navy Blue, are you, Sage?
Yes, Navy Blue.
Yeah, Navy Blue, Sage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That album's fire. I thought the beats were crazy on that. And then one more, I mean, everybody knows this, but I've just been bumping it nonstop. It's the first Coke Wave with French Montana and Max B. I fuck with it because I usually record, record off a lot of Hennessy in the system. And I can tell French Montana is stupid smacked every verse he records on that thing. He is just so smacked, like just...
How else would your ad lib be, huh? Like, yeah, that's just a stupid lit thing to do. Okay,
not really. I mean, everybody knows that. I mean, around my way, everybody knows that album. So that's not like a sleeper, really. But
no, those are all really great picks. Uncle John is pretty dope, and yeah, Navy Blue is the man. I don't know if you've heard his last project, Song of Sage.
I just started listening to it. It's crazy.
Yeah, because we love Earl and we love Mike and everybody that's in the kind of direction of that. And I just realized with this last project, like, yo, he's one of the most talented. He's literally one of the most talented out of all of them. But yeah, I really recommend Song of Sage, Post Panic. Yeah, yeah. Reminds me, I keep telling people this, but it reminds me of like Pieces of a Man by Gil Scott-Heron. Like it's that kind of like introspective. Damn. That's what it reminds me of. Is if I'm abstracting it a little bit, then yeah.
Yeah.
So that's cool. Let's see. We got the fucking mountain goats in here. we got what was her name? Susie Cruz? Susie Cruz. Wait, what?
Julie Cruz.
Ryan
Sounds
Beatty.
Like a peanut character.
We got fucking Sunday Julie Service Cruz. Choir. Miles Davis, Robert Glasper. I like that. It's a nice mix, different bag. I guarantee people are going to get a recommendation or two or something they haven't heard out of that. So I really appreciate those guys. And the last thing that we were going to do, like I said, this is a pretty short episode today, but it's been amazing so far. The last thing I wanted to do is a quick Kid Cudi discography ranking, because we're doing that for our folks over at Obligatory. So me and Trent got lists. He's got 7 albums, and I'm looking at my list right now, and I haven't even finished it. I haven't finished the last 2 spots.
I need to bring up his catalog.
Yeah, me too. What's that? He had that one terrible one. What was that one?
It was Speed and Bullet to Heaven.
Speed and Bullet to Heaven. His rock album.
His rock album.
That shit was ass. Oh my god.
He did the rock EP with like Wizard with Dot the Genius or whatever, the Wizard shit. Right. That was like him, you know, stepping his toes in it. And then just like
fire. I think it's fire when people just make the trash rock album.
Yeah, like the Lil Wayne Rebirth type shit.
I'm trying to be like that. I hope I get on one day just to make the trash grunge resurgence album.
Yeah,
because he's mad at TikTok right now too.
Why?
They like took the Day and Night joint, and they like
I saw this
TikTok thing with it, and he like tweeted about it yesterday. He was all like, y'all are taking my song and taking the lyrics out. I'm pissed about that.
Damn.
I'm like, bro, you about to get another plaque off this shit.
Yeah,
I was about to say, that's kind of old head. To like
off TikTok and you tripping about. Yeah.
It's literally just the meme is just like, just the words, now look at this. And then they just like show some weird shit on
now
TikTok.
Now look at this.
Now look at this. And it's just like, I don't know, some like fucking crazy dude outside. I don't know. But yeah, I did actually see that he's like kind of pressed about it.
You good? No, he's good.
Well, shit, I got my list right here. I'll run through really quick because spoiler alert: Speed and Bullet to Heaven is the bottom. I'll go from last to best. But yeah, I got Speed and Bullet to Heaven, and then I have the new Man on the Moon shit. I just couldn't really get into it.
It's not that good. It's
like, it's got its moments where I'm like, well, let me preface all this by saying I wasn't like the biggest Kid Cudi fan. Like, I know like some people, like Kid Cudi is like your favorite artist. Like,
I mean,
like,
he wasn't
one of
my favorite
artist,
but I definitely had the big Kid Cudi phase myself.
Yeah. And I totally get that. Like, I get the merit and everything, but that wasn't me. So like Man on the Moon 3, even the parts that kind of like bring me back to my peak Kid Cudi fandom, I was just like, it's not even that great. Mm-hmm. So I had that, what is that, 6 out of 7? And then I have that one, the Saturday Flight. I never really listened to that one. The Kid Cudi Presents Saturday Flight.
Yeah.
But it's good. That one's good too. It's got some cool features and stuff. That was right after Indica, which...
Satellite,
yeah, that one. That one is, it's cool, but it's just nothing special to me. And then we start getting into the realm of where I really start liking the catalog a lot. And that's, for me, that's like Passion, Pain, Demon Slaying. I think that was his last one that I was like really crazy about. Like, I really liked almost everything about it. And then Man on the Moon 2 is great. Not as good as the first installation of that. But so I have Man on the Moon 2, and then Indica, and then the original Man on the Moon. So I think those top 4 are really great. And then bottom 3, I don't love.
So
I don't really even like that much.
So top 4 is 1, Man on the Moon 1, 2, Indica, 3, Man on the Moon 2, 4, Passion, Pain, and Demon Slayer.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, our lists are kind of trending in the same direction. We have the same like top 4 and bottom 3, but were a little jumbled. So I just want to say, yeah, I was one of those people. Like, Kid Cudi, huge fan really early on. I remember driving to Seattle to go see one of his concerts. I think right before this album was coming. No, I'm sorry. Right before Man on the Moon 2 was coming out. Shout out Vita. Vita took me.
Yeah, shout out Vita.
Shout out Vita, the GOAT. So I just, I even remember like the first time I heard Day and Night, or I was hearing Day and Night. And I remember seeing the music video on TV. And I don't think I was smoking weed yet, but I was like, this is what it's
about
like.
To.
I'm about to now. I'm on a path now. So my list, Speed and Bullet to Heaven at the bottom. Yeah, unfortunately. I do give this album a little bit more credit than I think it typically gets for its reputation. But because there is some actual, because we just re-listened to it too to like review it for obligatory again. But it was a little better than I thought it was initially. And it does have some okay songs on it. I thought about putting Satellite Flight last because it's like the least memorable of any of his albums to me. But yeah, they're both at the bottom for me. Man on the Moon 3, I agree with you. It's not great, I don't think. It does have some pretty cool moments on it, but it was one of those albums I stopped listening to really, really quickly. Like 2-3 listens, I probably stopped. I agree. Passion, Pain, and Demon Slaying was cool. You know what I also didn't notice about him is that, like, it felt like he didn't release a lot of albums. Like, he took multiple hiatuses and breaks. But it was like, you have a Kid Cudi album every year from 2009 to 2011, and then he takes a break, and then 2013 to 2016 he made an album every year after that, and then he took another break, and then 2020 he dropped Man on the Moon 3. I guess there are just more albums of his than I think about. Passion, Pain, and Demon Slaying, I agree, pretty good. It was like another one of his more comebacky, old Cudi sounding kind of records, and again has some really good moments, but overall didn't quite live up to what I was hoping. Still, I remember when I first heard it.
That album also has some really great features on it, though.
Yes,
that's like, probably one of the strongest points of that.
Yeah,
Three Stacks features. Like,
Three Stacks feature. Even the Willow Smith feature that's on there. That song, Rose Golden, that's a good fucking song.
It's all quality.
Number three for me, Indicud, which I think also kind of is like underrated or got a bad rap at the time, still does. I think that is one of his more ambitious albums, maybe most ambitious albums, without it going to the extent of like Speed and Bullet to Heaven. And like you were saying about the guests that are on Passion, Pain, and Demon Slaying, like that album has a bunch of cool guests, especially considering when he had them on there. Father John Misty, fucking Kendrick Lamar, the Solo Dolo Part 2, that's a gem. Two Shorts on there randomly. Haim, the RZA, fucking ASAP Rocky's on it. So I think that's got a cool cast of guests as well. Underrated album. Underrated album. Now, we disagree on this too. Man on the Moon 1, I think is great for the nostalgia. And it's my second favorite purely out of the amazing nostalgia it brings me. But I don't really think it's... I think it is not nearly on the level that Man on the Moon 2 is. I think Man on the Moon 2 is the Kid Cudi album that really epitomized like the dark things that were going on in his life, some of the most troubling things that were going on in his life, that I think brought him an experience of catharsis that you don't just go over multiple times in your life, right? Or try to go back to that space too many times in your life. So and then also guests on this album are freaking great. The CeeLo Green feature is awesome. Both the Mary J. Blige features are awesome.
Chuck English Beat.
Chuck English Beat is on here. GLC is on here. And this has some of my absolute favorite songs. I think it's the most well-rounded of any of them. What are y'all like with Kid Cudi? Were y'all ever really a fan of him? And do you have a favorite album by him?
When I was like, the first one, that was like right when the level of drugs went up with me and my friend group.
So, yeah, I'm not kidding. I feel like that was the first time I was like, yo, this must be what smoking weed sounds like.
That was we was already smoking weed. We just upped it up a little further than that. But anyway, that was so I had some times with that album. What was that one soundtrack to my life? Or no?
Yeah, soundtrack to my life.
I've been hearing that all the time in my homies' cars. And then the second one, I hella like the song All Along. It's really sad, but I always fuck with that. Yeah.
That album hits deep. It does.
But other than those two albums, I never. And the one that he just did with Kanye, Kids See Ghosts. I played that one I played that one. But other than that, I can't say that I gave much anything, like a lot of play, to know whether I liked it or not.
What about you, Cal?
Yeah. When Kid Cudi first dropped, I was skeptical. I was hesitant to get into it. You know, just being who I was at the time. And really who got me like super deep into that record was Ep.
Wow. Shout out to Ep.
I moved up to Portland and I would like pick him up from where he lived and bring him to my house in Hawthorne where we were recording. And we were bumping like Kid Cudi, Man on the Moon, and Clips and like Ninth Wonder Emerged. And those were like, we'd always run.
That's a nice bag.
That's a trio right there. That's fire.
Yeah. I kind of started like what T&E's sound was like by more or less. And, he kind of convinced me because I was like, this dude can't sing for shit.
That was what I would hear when I would try to show somebody the shit.
He put it in my head of like, nah, like listen to the, like he's not fucking whatever, trying to sing like Michael Jackson. Like he's just like putting his emotions out. Mm-hmm. And once that connected, then like I became a really big Kid Cudi fan for sure.
It's the best music to listen to when you're coming down off Molly.
when you're coming down hard.
You hear those hums and they soothe you.
they re-put the serotonin that you're missing back in your brain a little bit.
They're trying to replay exactly.
Sure. And definitely like I was just about, you know, it was just kind of like, man, is he really even that good at rap? You know, it's like when you listen to people like LZI or some shit, and you hear like a Kid Cudi verse, like, is this dude even good at rap? But it's like, it's a different world. It's a different, like, getting the vibe and a different thing. So that was my only, like, thing with Kid Cudi that took me a minute to kind of, like, get over that hump. Like, don't judge him like this underground spitter. Like, he's making a full, complete song that's going to put you through these emotions.
That's cool, though.
The thing that kind of turned me off about Man on the Moon was like Common narrating it.
Oh yeah, that doesn't really sound that great to me anymore. I thought I liked that when it first came out, but now it's just distracting.
I thought that was tight.
Yes, at the time I thought it was epic. Going back now, honestly,
I'm like, it's a little corny, but
I just watched the movie Just Right with Common and Queen Latifah.
Yeah, that movie's fucking great.
Shit is fire.
I went and bought a Nets jersey. I got Jason.
Yeah, it's Common playing for the Nets.
Common's a 5'8" small forward.
That movie is fucking great.
I just remember those being kind of like the negatives, but then I really got into it. And I mean, if I had to rank his albums, it'd be the first Man on the Moon, then the second Man on the Moon,
and then so forth.
And then, like, I really like Kids See Ghosts, like Reborn. I played that.
Reborn is so fire. Sci-Hi the Prince wrote that whole shit.
Crazy.
He's crazy.
Yeah, Sci-Hi is crazy.
I like that even at that time, and you had a different perspective on like what a rapper or what a singer was supposed to do, that you still eventually kind of came around to that. Because I think like Kid Cudi in that way like did quite a bit for music, because a lot of people started to emphasize like the spirit, the emotion, the personality of it ahead of maybe the singing, the writing components of it that people really took seriously for a long time.
And he is really a great singer. He's just unique. It's like you never really heard somebody doing that. And so your first thought could be like, oh, well, this I haven't heard it. It's, you know, it can go to a negative place really quick with that shit. But yeah, Kid Cudi's great. I watched that interview with him where I liked the new Man on the Moon project. I thought it had some joints. Not to say I like have bumped it a whole lot, but I have to like remind myself when I'm like judging projects, and it's like you're gonna compare it to an album you've heard for like 11 years that you got to live with in all these different places, and now we consume music in such a different way. So I thought like the Man on the Moon 3 project had some joints, but I'm with you. I didn't allow myself to really like keep listening to it, whether that was because of the music or just because of the time we live in where there's always something new to check out.
Anytime Kid Cudi drops, so we talked about this in the review too, is like we've always asked for old Kid Cudi. Like pretty much ever since he dropped that first album for some reason, like people have always had this nostalgia about when his music, when it drops, that it always feels kind of hard to live up to. Like it always kind of seems like of this magnitude that's just like crazy. For what it's worth though, on a side note, probably Kid Cudi's got to be one of the top 10, top 5 concerts I've been to. I've seen him twice, and both times were equally amazing. Like he's got something about the live show that takes it up another notch. So he's a great live performer as well.
My main slide against him is Pete Davidson likes him a lot.
Okay, I didn't know that, but that's, I mean,
I just can't. I want to punch that dude in the face so fucking bad.
That's hella funny.
It's hard out here with Pete Davidson.
Fuck Pete Davidson.
Fuck Pete Davidson, bro.
Don't know
that man, but I'm with you. We are violating him, huh?
We've got the name of the episode now.
Fuck Pete Davidson.
Yep.
Right there, boom.
It's funny that Kid Cudi, like, I love dude. He seems like a great person, but I watched like the Zane Lowe interview, and he was like, people just don't like respect me as a rapper. You know, like people don't think I'm really like barring out on these songs.
He's not usually.
I'm like, dog, you said shut your mouth before I fuck it.
Yeah, like, exactly.
Come on, come with some better bars then.
I was about to say, wait a minute. Yeah, come on now. Nobody claims. I mean,
like, you don't want to be compared to the LZIs in that. Like, live in your lane. Don't.
Right. No, I think it's actually, that's a good point, because I feel like a lot of the weight that Kid Cudi holds in like just in rap music is that of like an inspirer. Like I feel like rappers that are our age, like you look like Travis Scott and shit, you look at rappers that are like our age,
yeah,
they grew up listening to Kid Cudi like we did. Mm-hmm. And you see the influence there, like so heavy. I think Kid Cudi, he's from Cleveland too, right?
Yep.
Yeah,
which, you know, doesn't have like the most robust hip-hop scene. I mean, it has a scene, but it's not like, you know, one of those Atlantas, you know.
Hey bro, they got Trippy Red.
They got Trippy, they do. And you can see in Trippy even like the influence,
yeah,
of a Kid Cudi.
Sure, yeah.
And I think Kid Cudi is really interesting because those first couple albums are really good indications of like a starting point for an artist. But I don't think it really evolved until the Travis Scotts got bigger, and then you can kind of see like, oh, is this like a fully evolved Kid Cudi sound? Like, is this what it gets to? Because he went way left after like those first three or four albums. He went, you know, Speeding Bullet to Heaven, and even Passion, Pain, Indica, those are all like pretty left of where he started. So I don't know. It's interesting though. I feel like he holds a lot of weight as like an influence, more so than as like a great rapper or a great singer.
And the other fold to that too is,
yeah,
like,
great artist.
Oh yeah, and a great overall artist with like a vision too. He always comes in with a vision too that I think people see, and he's able to kind of, you know, communicate it well. But what I was going to say, the other fold to that too, his influence, I think, that was really important was when he came along in the good music like cycle, and when he came along in Kanye's career, because, you know, people refer back to what was the album after Graduation? 808 and Heartbreaks.
808 and Heartbreaks.
And that's kind of when Kid Cudi like first stepped into Kanye's life. And so that, like, even that album kind of started to take on shape from what he was doing. And so, like, it's funny because some of the music, or some of the reason why we see him as so influential or whatnot, isn't even from like his own catalog, his own albums. Like there's, it was reverberating out like from an early place. So,
well, nobody was humming on tracks like that. Like the man's got like hit melodies every time he just hums some shit.
Right. Yeah, just humming.
Yeah.
Another slight is Pete Davidson's best friend is Machine Gun Kelly.
Oh, come on.
Another slide against Kid Cudi.
And they're both from Cleveland. MGK's from Cleveland.
Y'all read the Machine Gun Kelly album?
Wait, yeah, he dropped some shit. He dropped some shit this weekend, like a song or something.
Have we ever actually even mentioned Machine Gun Kelly on this?
No, I don't think we've said Machine Gun Kelly on this podcast before.
I think, Milk, you were the first person to ever say Machine Gun Kelly on the podcast.
I'm about to write a dissertation.
Congrats,
on white
man.
Rappers. I'm about to write a whole thing on white rappers. And Machine Gun Kelly is going to be a big part of it.
he's not a white rapper. He's a rock star.
Well, yeah, now he's a rock star.
He is.
Because that's a favorite thing of white rappers to do is
evolve beyond hip hop. Yeah,
I can't wait to do it, baby.
Yes.
Put on like a studded belt and they're a rock star.
Yeah, exactly. I'm white, so I'm gonna hop over here.
Pink
now,
guitar.
It did all right for me.
The realest thing in hip hop is white rapper on white rapper hate and violence.
Ooh, yes, the G-Eazys and the Machine Gun Kellys and the M&Ms of the world
so
just
fire.
Taking
if
each other out.
If we all just killed each other, the world would be a lot
yeah,
place.
They're the three dudes in the Mexican standoff with the guns pointed toward each other, like all three of them.
Exactly.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. My last thing on Kennedy is, do you think he would have been even more iconic if he like pulled a Lauryn Hill? And would have just dropped maybe just dropped the first two Men on the Moons and that was it. And then we didn't have anything else to judge him off of.
Yeah, like if he went Men on the Moon 1, 2, and then waited 10 years and then did Men on the Moon 3.
Yeah, and was still doing the little stuff, you know, the stuff with Kanye to keep his.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. Because you would take out.
Probably, yeah.
But then, okay, so I have two thoughts about this. One, you take out like a lot of the material that people just didn't love as much as your original, so that aura is still kind of there, because I was looking at the Wikipedia page for these albums too, and so right in the next column they have like how much they sold too, and so Man on the Moon 1 did numbers, Man on the Moon 2 did numbers, and then it was like Indica still went gold because people love Kid Cudi so much, and then the rest of the albums they just sold less and less and less, and so I think there's that where like if you just went straight like 10 years later, you hadn't really dropped a full solo album and then you did. Yeah, I think that would be pretty big, especially in this age. But another part to his story that's really interesting is that, I mean, he went down to the point of Speed and Bullet to Heaven. Like that moment kind of lives in infamy. And then now there's kind of this redemption where like, you know, people are a lot more favorable about him and kind of feel more about how they used to about him. And
what year was Speed and Bullet to Heaven?
2014 or 15.
I think it was 2015. I bet you in 10, 15 years, there's going to be a weird resurgence of people who love Speed and Bullet to Heaven.
Yes.
Like, it's going to be, like, randomly a classic all of a sudden. It just has that vibe of an album.
Yeah. Like, I think Yeezus has a good case for that. Yeah, yeah. I think it's going to do that and maybe have
Yeezus
less.
Yeezus is fire.
And Yeezus is pretty. Yeezus is great.
Yeezus has his moments, but I didn't like Yeezus at all when it came out. And now it's like people's favorite album is Yeezus.
That's another like first album listening experience I'll probably never forget. Like hearing Yeezus and being like, what the fuck was that?
Yeah.
I didn't expect that at all. I had like a whole mindset made up of like, oh, he could probably do this
fire,
or that.
That
and
shit
then,
sounds like, that shit sounds just like, damn, that shit's crazy.
Yeah.
I see Cal, you're shaking. Yeah, you don't like Yeezus.
I smoke way too much weed to listen to albums like
Yeezus. That shit sounds like it's just
paranoia.
Because it's a palate cleanser from the get too. It's like when you hear the Daft Punk song at the beginning, it's like it's clear this album is like tripping out on a different wavelength.
Yeah, but I had a roommate at the time when that shit dropped, and she was like played the album all the time, so I heard it a lot, but. Bound to is my joint because I'm like, you know.
Oh, that's just fire. Bound to is super hard.
That is
a
great
song.
I don't hear Kanye on some soul shit or whatever.
I just found out that the track that's sampled in Bound to is the track that's sampled in A Boy Is a Gun by Tyler the Creator, which I think is crazy because those samples are two in wildly different.
Wait, what was the song by Tyler the Creator? I didn't catch that.
A Boy Is a Gun.
Oh.
Off of Eeyore.
Ooh, that song is amazing.
I don't remember what that song is called, but. The original, but
when they got Kanye sued because they didn't really like clear it, and they
right,
dropped, that was a big deal too. that record goes for crazy amounts of money now. It was like, you know, $25 vinyl, and now it's like, you know, $500 for that record just because Kanye used it.
Mm-hmm.
Crazy.
Yeah. Yep.
Great.
It's crazy.
Crazy, man. The Kanye effect.
The Kanye stimulus package. Kanye, right? Yeah.
Another artist where it's like, you know, I think people need to take a little note from Lauryn Hill and just chill out, or like Frank Ocean. Mm-hmm. Just like chill.
Just
man.
Go
like,
ghost. Yeah.
If you're that popular, man, that's like what Kendrick's doing. Like, I'm sure Kendrick could be releasing an album every year and pleasing his fan base, but it's going to kind of take away from the greatness of his records. You know, there's something for like artists like that need to take their time.
Yeah, especially when people want to genuinely change pace and do something different. Now, Kanye is like, he'll really press that. He'll really push that forward and really try to change quickly. But for a lot of people to make genuine change, and again, that's like Kanye being bipolar, right? And like literally having a certain mindset. So yeah, that's why he is the way he is. But, you know, and for normal people, or for a lot of people, like, you know, to go through these changes that make such big shifts in your music, like, that could take time. Or maybe just the music could keep getting better with time. I guess everybody's different, but I agree with you. That's kind of how I see it.
Well, I also think, like, not to keep this conversation going, I think a big mistake that artists make is doing the part two. I think if Kid Cudi would have dropped that album and not called it Man on the Moon 3 and just called it like My New Record, we probably would have judged it a little different. You know, I think artists really fuck
yeah
it.
Yeah,
like, it shouldn't. I don't know,
because like you said, no matter what you do on that project, people have sat with the original for much longer. They have this nostalgia about it. They're very removed from that era of their life now. It's been 10 years or more.
Mm-hmm.
So you naturally draw comparisons with the older one, which I think artists don't want you to do, but that's just kind of the nature of putting them in the same series.
Yeah. I can't think of a part two album that I've liked better than the first one, besides Slum Village Fantastic Volume 2.
Volume 2? Yeah.
Yeah,
that's
a rare breed. That's like Terminator 2 shit, you know. They don't just come around every, you know. I had to reference a movie. I couldn't think of an album that I thought the 2 was better than the 1. So
I can only think of mixtapes. Dedication Volume 2 is fire, obviously.
Actually, yeah. The ones I do think of that are like, oh, the second one was better or the third one was the best one, is shit when they were like, they made all of these in a short amount of time. It's not like the one sat out there, was legendary, and then you just brought back the two because the one was hype.
Well, yeah, it's like when Method Man and Redman did Blackout 2.
Two, yeah.
It was a dope record, but it's like, I just was like, this is not Blackout.
Yeah.
You know, it's like they really named it something else and I would have enjoyed the album better. They should do that for me because I'm the only person who listens to music.
I understand, man.
But, I don't know if anybody else
judges.
So.
Yeah, well, shit, man. I think I'm ready to close it out here. Let Trent get going and call this an episode. It's been a fantastic one.
Hey, this was hella fun.
Yo, I appreciate you coming on, man. Milk, welcome to the podcast again. Calvin Valentine, welcome to the podcast again. Season 5, episode 27. Episode 78. It's been a fantastic one. And, I'm definitely gonna keep pushing Tiger's Milk. I've been texting homies, yo, we're interviewing these two guys. Listen to this project. I've been sending a link, okay? I'm gonna keep doing it, all right?
We need it. I'm gonna make sure we got content
dropping. You know what I mean? That was the one thing I tried to push on Milk. I know he likes to drop things quickly, but I was like, we also wanna like make sure this project lives a little beyond just the day that it comes out. So
Yeah.
I'm about to be there I'm about to be in LA on Wednesday.
There it is. So get it again.
Keep cooking.
Yes.
All right. Well, again, I appreciate y'all so much for coming on and having such fun with us, man. Really great conversations from y'all as well. Really appreciate both of your insights. Pax, always a pleasure, bro. Happy Saturday. It's Saturday, right?
Yeah.
Happy Saturday, bro. New Music Monday podcast drops on Monday, so this will be out in a couple days. Y'all have a blessed rest of your day. Enjoy the... you're in LA, so you got sunshine probably. Enjoy the little little cloudy breaks we get here partway through the day. So, shout out to y'all. Again, Cal V, Milk, thanks again. We're going to close this out. Have a good rest of your day.
All right, y'all.
Peace.
Peace, y'all.
Peace.